I call my book Tête-à-Tête because the passion between Simone de Beauvoir and Jean-Paul Sartre was more about it, the tête than the corps, but also because of their firm preference for the tête-à-tête in their social life generally. When you have to discuss things with several people at once, Beauvoir writes in her memoirs, conversation, except in very special circumstances, tends to become mundane. Sartre and Beauvoir surrounded themselves by young people, mostly women, whom they liked to call the family, which was odd given that they, you know, violently repudiated families. All the members of the family were lovers at some time, and sometimes lovers of both of them, provided they were women. And there was a huge amount of jealousy in the circle, which made things rather complicated and which probably explains why they almost never got together as a group, maybe two New Year's Eves over all those years. Generally, they went in for the tête-à-tête, which is much more, much easier for complicity and probably for telling lies. And I thought I'd just read you a bit about the tête-à-tête, the system that was formalized in 1937. Have I got sort of a bit, you know?
Yeah, please,
of course. You know, I told you they met in 1929, and then Sartre was called up military service for 2 years, and then they were sent to the provinces as philosophy teachers. Beauvoir was sent to Marseille, which she thought was utter exile. It terrified her. That was like being sent as a convict to Australia. And then, you know, she was sent to Rouen and Sartre to Le Havre. And they lived in grotty hotels right near the station, so that every Thursday when there was no teaching, they would flee either to Paris, the only city that counted for them, or else to each other. One of them would visit the other. And finally, in 1937, after 8 years of sort of living near railway stations and reading detective novels on trains, they both got a placement in Paris for the first time. Sartre found them the hotel. It was the Hotel Mistral near Montparnasse Cemetery. It doesn't look very promising, has a shabby stairway and moth-eaten halls, he told Beauvoir, but the rooms are large and clean, with a sofa, rug, and bookshelves on the walls. When Beauvoir came back to Paris, they moved in, taking rooms on different floors. Thus, we had all the advantages of a shared life, Beauvoir writes in her memoirs, without any of its inconveniences. Their favourite cafes, the Dome, Coupole and Select, were close by on the Boulevard du Montparnasse. Just around the corner from the Mistral, on the Avenue du Maine, was a large noisy brasserie, the Café des Trois Mousquetaires. For the next few years, these cafes were as familiar to them as their hotel rooms. What never wearies me, Sartre would write, is to sit on chairs which belong to nobody, or if you like, to everybody, in front of tables which belong to nobody. That's why I go and work in cafes. I achieve a kind of solitude and abstraction. Now that they lived in the same city, they had to be careful not to encroach on each other's private space. Their days were strictly scheduled. It's interesting that freedom doesn't go hand in hand with spontaneity, rather the contrary, and if you think why, there are good reasons. If they were barging into each other's hotel rooms, it wouldn't be good. Their days were strictly scheduled. On the whole, they didn't see each other before they left for school. Sartre tended to be irascible when he first got up and preferred his own company at breakfast. I can hardly endure even the beaver, he confessed in his journal. I have been known, when she'd be waiting for me at the rallye, to pop in to the Café des Trois Mousquetaires and quickly gulp down a coffee and croissant in order to remain for a moment still wrapped up in myself and last night's dreams. Their afternoon writing hours were equally sacred. Lunchtimes and evenings after 8 p.m. were their sociable hours. They had long ago decided that the most satisfying form of communication was tête-à-tête. If Sartre was eating with Vanda at the Coupole, or if Beauvoir was seeing Olga at the Dome, there was no question of the other spontaneously joining them, and time limits were sacrosanct. Their friends constantly complained that when their time was up, they were expected to melt away, making way for the next person. One woman, an American journalist who knew Sartre when she was in her 20s, she told me in Manhattan, she's now in her 80s, that she found herself slotted into Sartre's schedule. She was accorded Wednesday evenings till Thursday mornings, and from Saturday afternoon till Sunday afternoon. She said to me, Such treated women like a chest of drawers. You're in the top drawer, she's in the bottom drawer. I hated it. It drove me mad. Most of the time, though, Sartre didn't tell his women about the others. Like all professional seducers, he was an inveterate liar in his personal life. He told the women enough to make them jealous, but not enough to make them walk off. Besides, actually, cleverly, most of them he made financially dependent on him. That would have some of us sticking around, wouldn't it? I need a Sartre. With Beauvoir, however, he told the truth, mostly. One of their women friends said of Sartre and Beauvoir's relationship, "I had never seen anything like it. I can't describe what it was like to be present when those two were together. It was so intense that sometimes it made others who saw it sad not to have it." Sartre and Beauvoir knew this. In the journal he kept during the war, Sartre commented that the relationship between him and Beauvoir appeared fascinating and crushingly powerful to the people around them. He wrote, "Nobody could love one of us without being gripped by a fierce jealousy for the other one, which would end by changing into an irresistible attraction." So he rather used his relationship with Beauvoir to attract young women who were fascinated by their relationship.